Hello, men. Welcome to another podcast from Morningstar Men's Ministry. Today we're beginning a new series. It was recorded live on Saturday morning, and the title of the series is Spiritual Coaching. How do you and I equip ourselves so that we can help other men to grow in their faith, to grow in a spiritual vitality? What prerequisites are necessary in our own lives? How do we prepare to be spiritual coaches? And then something that I think many men struggle with is the actual nuts and bolts of doing this. How do I start the process with another man? Suppose that that man comes to me and says, I'd like someone to mentor me, and I think you might be a good mentor. Or suppose, just as probably, that no one comes to you, but that you sense a call to step into that level of responsibility, but you simply don't know how. For the next approximately 12 weeks, we are going to be exploring that exact topic. How do I equip myself to be a coach, and then how do I go about the weekly business of coaching another man, helping that man to grow in his own spiritual vibrancy, to be what I like to refer to as a self-feeder. This is our first in that topic, and we focused on the principle of investment today. I think you'll enjoy this. Please follow along and look forward to catching up with you again next week. Word for the morning, which we're going to get into in detail actually, is invest. My plan for this whole 3 months is every week I'm going to give you a new word. I'd like you to remember the word. I've tried to get you to remember verses. That's not been successful. I've tried to get you to remember big ideas, and that's not been very effective either. So we're going to simplify it still further. I'm going to ask you to remember a word. So our word for the week is invest. We're going to talk for the rest of the morning about investment. What does it mean to invest?
To put something in hopes of a larger return.
Okay. That's a good start off point. To invest is to take something of value, combine it with other things in the hopes that the end result is going to be worth more than you started with. Therefore, investment always contains risk. Because, some of you know this, you're liable to throw something of value into something in the hopes that it's going to appreciate, and what happens? It does poor, right? You either end up with less of, or you end up with none of. Or even worse, you end up with a liability. Maybe you've had a past business experience where you started out with something, you took some of your hard-earned money, or maybe all of your savings, or maybe you went and borrowed money, and you invested it in a business, and in the end, not only didn't you have what you started with, but you had bills that you had to pay. You had liabilities that you'd incurred. So not all investments do well. I'm going to ask you to think for the morning about investing in yourself. We get the idea of investing in financial terms. But the first thing, and I'll start with the big idea here, and I guess we'll pass out page. This is going to be complicated. All right, I didn't bind these. So you're going to take two pages, a page one and a page two, and then pass them around. So what I'd like you to do, do you have a Bible? If you don't have a Bible, bring one. I'm going to be pretty insistent about some things. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 13. And we're going to talk about a parable that is, it's become one of my favorite parables. And I have to tell you that years ago, I really didn't like this story. How many of you grew up in the church and are familiar with what were referred to as evangelistic services? It was a thing where, give or take, depending on your church structure, every year or every 6 months, A guy who's apparently, I mean, I remember this from being a kid, a guy whose job it was to travel around to try to win souls. Now, there's nothing wrong with the basic concept, but all I can remember as a kid growing up in a country church is sitting there in a poorly lit church when I would rather be somewhere else, listening to pastors talk to me about how if this or that didn't happen, I was going to hell. Maybe you experienced a few of them in your day as well. This parable was often used. This parable that we're going to talk about was often used.
What?
Matthew 13. And I'd sit there and I'd listen to, and in fear for my eternal soul, that I might not be good soil, and I could be in trouble. I can remember a day about 15 years ago. I'd been, by this time, teaching for a while. And I was really frustrated with the results that I was getting. And I sat down with God one day and I said, I just don't get it. People don't seem to get it. Is it me? Am I doing this that badly that people just don't get it? And I, for some reason, I had this idea. I said, you know, if teaching people is challenging, I thought to myself, Jesus should have encountered this. If teaching people is really that difficult, if helping them to gain new life understandings, to transform the way they think and live is really that difficult, then Jesus should have encountered this regularly. And if he encountered it, it's probably, there's some clues to it in the gospel. And so I said, I'm going to go through the gospels, and instead of reading them personally to convict me, I'm going to read them for the benefit of seeing if there are any clues in what Jesus said and did that would help me to understand how to relate to people better. That was the day that I started to use the Bible as shepherd training instead of sheep training. I don't know if you've ever heard me use that phrase before, but today you are entering shepherd training. Most of us grow up and we are trained to use the Bible for sheep training. We read through the scriptures as sheep training. I am a follower of Christ, but you're more than a follower of Christ. You are invited into the process of being a co-worker with Christ. You are invited into the process of being a man who will reach out and connect with other men.
1 Corinthians 5:18.
So, that's a whole different level of learning. You will begin to look at the same scriptures, but understand them in different ways. That was a long-winded way of saying that this parable that we're going to look at, that many of you may have looked at in the past as talking to you about your sheep-like nature, I want to show you how powerful this is as shepherd training. The same day Jesus went out of the house and he sat beside the sea. We're going to start at the first verse. Maybe that would be useful information to you. And great crowds gathered about him so that he got into a boat and he sat down. The whole crowd stood on the beach. And he told them many things in parables, saying, and this is his first parable then, a sower went out to sow, and as he sowed, some seed fell along the path. What's happening here? What's our word for the day? Ooh, look at that. What's happening here? What's our word for the day? What's happening here? Investment. There you go. I grew up on a farm. Commercial farming today is big business. Every spring, commercial farms will invest thousands, hundreds of thousands, even millions of dollars in planting, in sowing, in everything that it takes to get seed in the ground in the hopes that it will yield a return. This is big enough business that if they don't have the capital to do it, they go to their banks and borrow thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars to augment what they already have on hand so that they can make sure they've got enough fuel, they've got enough pesticide, they've got enough herbicide, they've got all the seed they need, they've got all the equipment they need to get a crop in the ground. In the hopes that, what? Only some of it is going to end up being a profitable investment. If you watch the news over the last few years, there have been droughts that have hit certain areas of the country that has just totally decimated family farms. Back to the parable. Investment is taking place. And as he sowed, some seed fell along the path, and the birds came and devoured them. So what's happened there? Complete loss so far. How does that make you feel? You ever lost money? You ever thrown money at something and lost it? Have you ever thought, I think I'm going to buy into this stock? It's low right now. Or at least you thought it was low. 2 years later, you've learned the meaning of low. And it isn't at the time that you bought it. Do you quit? Think about that. Do you quit? Some people do. It's not clear. What's one of the other things about investment? We've defined investment so far as taking something of value, combining it with other things in the hopes that it's going to increase in value. By its very nature, investment is about what? The unknown. And so we don't know if our efforts are going to produce fruit. Bring that back to us. What do you mean?
Well, you don't. For me, because I do this. I'm not a little day trader guy. I'm a long-term guy. But I don't invest in something just willy-nilly. Just like, oh yeah, here's $10,000.
Okay.
I look at the portfolio. I look at the company. What's going on with it? Does it have good leadership there? Before I invest in something, well, just like this farmer who tested the soil. Oh, wait a minute. There's no way we can do this here. We can't farm here. We have to prepare the soil. It's not completely, you know what I mean?
No, I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because remember what we're talking about. We're talking about first we invest in ourselves so that maybe actually we should read the first page here. Top of the first page. This is the big idea for the day. So you got the one word. You're doing really well with that, incidentally. Twice in 5 minutes, you have remembered the key word for the day. I must invest in myself and in my relationship with God as a pre-qualification for investing in others. We may have run out, which is actually a good sign.
Did you have two?
He has two.
That was it, all the way.
Let me know how many you need next week. I'll bring some extra copies of week one. All right, let's get back to this. So what Jim said is, it's not a complete unknown. So one of the things that, and I don't want to rush ahead of this, we're going to have plenty of time to talk about this in the weeks to come, but Jim's point applied to investing in others is, there needs to be some discernment in who I'm going to choose to invest my time in. Now here's an interesting thing. Do you value your time? Is it something that if you give it to someone else, you consider it to be of great value? Because if you don't, then it's pretty meaningless to invest in other people. It doesn't look like an investment. Do you value yourself? If I were to be able to watch what you do over the course of a week, would I be able to tell that you value yourself? Not that you pamper yourself. That's different. Not that you indulge yourself, but that you consider yourself to be a valuable asset that requires care, attention, and meticulous investment. Think about that. How would I know that? That's not a trick question. How would I know that?
You have to take care of yourself when you
exercise to eat well, read every day, run sharp. Some of the basic things.
Okay. Huh?
Maybe you use your time wisely. Are you always doing something? Or are you laying around? Or, you know, that type of.
Okay. Did you describe, did everybody hear what he said? Can you repeat that, the whole thing loud enough so we're sure everybody heard that?
Right, you take care of yourself, you eat well, you exercise, you read, you learn new things to keep your mind sharp. Generally just basic things to take care of yourself.
Two different things going on there. One is maintenance, one is investment for improvement. So if you own a house, you know that there's a certain level of maintenance that's required so it doesn't fall down on its own foundation. That's not the same as making improvements in your life. So to invest in your life is different than to maintain your life. Are you tracking with me? Are you more valuable today than you were 10 years ago?
About making yourself a better person. Or trying to anyway.
Okay. Most men invest in themselves where, do you suspect? No, that's pampering yourself. That's not investing in yourself. Where do most men, if they choose to invest in themselves, invest? Training for work. Now, you've just described several dimensions of humanity. You've described a physical dimension. You've described an intellectual dimension. If we have a spiritual dimension, then that would require that we invest there. Are you a working machine, or are you anything more? Because if you're nothing but a working machine, then the most prudent investments that you can make are investments that will make you a better worker. Higher output, smarter output, whatever. If you are nothing but a working machine and that is your call in life, then that is where you should... You're a fool if you don't invest every free asset in that. Because that's what you are. Are you more than a worker? Again, not a trick question, but maybe a question you need to think about. What is your top priority in life? Are you more than just what you can do in life? Do you genuinely believe that you are an asset in the kingdom of God and that an investment in you is wise because it will bear fruit for the kingdom of God? Now just really think about that. Because if you don't think that, how much do you think you're going to invest in your spiritual dimension of life? Honestly, how much would a smart person invest in something that's going to have no return? You need to carry this idea away. Do you really, truly believe that this book calls us to be workers in the kingdom? Not just participants that sit, but that we are the hands and feet of Christ, we are the spokespeople of Christ, and that this message goes out and that people are helped, healed, their hurts and hang-ups are dealt with because of us. And if that's true, and if we are it, and we are the workers, then what do I need to begin to invest in substantially? Could I look at your calendar, could I look at your day right now and tell that you truly believe this? That's the challenge. Now I'm just gonna lay it on the line here, okay? I hear this a lot. I don't have time to read. I'm not very good at reading. I don't like reading. I'll read if I have to. But for the most part, if I don't have to read, I don't. Have you ever heard anyone say that?
Sure.
Have you ever lived inside the person who says that? Do you want to say something?
Yeah, because it's the human condition. We all make excuses for things that we don't like and that we don't feel like doing. But I don't like vegetables. No, you just have to prepare in a way that you can eat them. I struggled with that for years. I eat vegetables now. Why? The same reason he just said, because my body requires it. Now, if we're all sitting in this room, we're here for a reason. We can say that our body requires this particular food. There's no discussion about that. It's about how much you will need to get better. This is a willingness question. We have this conversation. This is a willingness question. How much better do you want to be? How much better do you want to feel spiritually? How spiritually full do you want to be?
Okay. That's part of it. That's absolutely part of it. Another part, and I talked with a guy this week about this. Most people do not. If I were to say, you should read the Bible every day. Suppose you'd never read a Bible, and I said, you should read the Bible every day. Where are you going to start?
Avoiding you.
Huh?
I'm going to start avoiding you.
Where do you start, and what do you do, and how much is enough? And I'll guarantee you, if you start where you start in most books, which is where?
Beginning.
By the time you hit Leviticus, you're done, buddy. You ain't seeing the Gospels. That's just the way it is.
First paragraph.
And I'm trusting about Adam and Eve.
I've recommended that people read any book that begins with John. First John, Second John, Third John.
We're going to get into the whole thing of where to read, how to read, what to do later on. Why? Because you're going to be teaching other men where to start and what to do. I want you to really understand that. In 3 months' time, you're going to be that guy. I'm not saying you're going to be up here, but in 3 months' time, well, maybe you would like to be up here. I would like you to be up here. But in 3 months' time, you're going to be able to sit across the table from somebody that has questions themselves and say, let me help you with that. But the first principle is you need to begin to invest in yourself. How much time do you spend investing in your spiritual understanding and discernment? And that's only part of your whole package of investment, incidentally. We're not going to get bogged down exclusively on the Bible. I can be a master at the Bible and be a bad communicator, and no one will listen. Okay, so there is understanding, and then there's skill sets that we need to acquire as well. So how much time are you investing now? If you want to be this person, you're going to have to make a significant investment. That means you're going to have to change your schedule. If you don't have time, if you wake up in the morning, you pour your cup of coffee, you feed the dog, you walk the cat, or maybe I got that backwards. I guess you feed the cat and you walk the dog. And you're out the door, you're never going to get this done. Maybe you need to stop right now and ask yourself, do you need to make a change in your schedule?
Yes.
Yes.
How do we overcome laziness?
How do you overcome laziness?
Let me give you an example. I've become CNC machines, companies trading. I've got to learn all the M codes and the G codes. I've got that paper sitting at my chair. Time, trying to memorize it, I let it go. I'll do it. How do we overcome laziness? Count the cost, do it best.
That is a really good question. Do you have a reason to read? Now, I just told you who the king, who this book tells you you are. You are an ambassador, you are a representative, you are a spokesperson, you are... Here, you're learning how to be a coach. Show of hands, how many of you feel you're qualified to sit right now across the table from another man and help them grow spiritually? Most of you cannot put your hands up right now. That's okay. I expected that.
I think with his questions, motivation and reward...
Go ahead.
How much do you care about it? What's the motivation there and the reward? What's the benefit that I'm going to receive out of this? Let's just break that down. That's the first thing in laziness. Whatever it is you're doing, what am I going to get out of it personally for me? Well, how does it benefit me? Maybe here now in the long run, I've got to see that enough where I've got to do what it takes to do that. even when I don't feel like doing that, but I see that reward.
Good cue. I'm gonna come back to what he said, but Don.
Investing in the right thing will give you, take you out of your laziness. If you're investing your time in what you believe, what we're talking about here, that laziness will change. You focus on the Bible. I mean, I don't read it. I'm one of those non-readers, so I have a prompt on my phone that shoots me a Bible verse every day. I'm kind of forced to read it because I don't sit and read. So every morning I got it. Boom. Oh, there I am again. I'll read it. Because otherwise I don't do it. It's focusing on the investing your time and maintenance in the right thing. That'll change whatever the rest of your life does. If you're investing in God, it's going to change for you.
Let's come back to, because John said about reward.
Because I'm lazy.
What is the reward in that case then? So I'm calling you to be coaches. I hope you're going to accept the invitation. What's the reward?
How do you feel, man?
Let's back up one step before that. Do you care about the people around you and do you genuinely want to help them? And you say you're not sure yet. I see some heads nodding. That's good. But maybe some of you aren't sure. Have you ever hurt enough in your own life that you wanted to change? Have you ever been confused enough in your own life that you felt totally lost and didn't know where to go? Has there been a person or a group of people in your life that have made all the difference? This is going to sound really cheesy, dumb, and corny, but I'm going to tell you a story from my past, okay? I would prefer you not all laugh in unison at the end. You can one at a time laugh later on. I was about 23, 24. I had been away from home for a few years. I think I've told this story in parts, but I'm going to tell the whole thing. My dad one day shows up at my shop, drops off a book. Now, he knew when I was younger I loved to read. My dad and I at that time did not have a great relationship. As a matter of fact, we had a pretty bad relationship. We lived 10 miles apart, and I saw him once every 6 months, if that gives you any ideas to the quality of the relationship. So he shows up one day, and he says, I got this book, and I know you used to like to read, and maybe you'd find it interesting. I took the book home, and it had been a while. Honestly, I did used to love to read, but it had been a while since I'd read anything much. I had kind of become like a lot of guys. And I thought, well, let me just pick it up, and I'll read it a little bit. And my dad knew that I had kind of like strayed from my Christ walk, that I really wasn't doing anything to nurture that, that in fact I was pretty much what you'd say living in rebellion. And I kind of suspected the book would have something to do with that. So I'm kind of like cued to the idea, okay, there's an angle here. I know there's an angle here, but I'll give it a shot. He made the effort. He brought the book to me. I was fascinated with the book. I read the book. I mean, I read the book quickly. In the process of reading the book, I remembered just exactly how great it felt to read, and I loved it. I started to read a little bit more. It was a seed he planted. It was one isolated seed. A couple of years go by. I get to the point in my work, in what I was trying to do, that I realized that I just didn't have what it took to get to where I needed to go. This is a key principle that I should stop and tell you all right now. What got you to where you are today is not going to get you to where you want to go. So if you continue to do the same practices, disciplines, at the same level, in the same way that is taking you to where you are now, it is not going to take you to the next level in life where you want to go. Do you understand that? Because a lot of people continue to do the same thing the same way and think they are growing. You are not growing. You are simply maintaining. If you open up the Bible and read the same things the same way, use the same practices and procedures daily, you are simply maintaining what you are.
And that's okay sometimes.
It's okay sometimes. But if you feel like you need to grow, you can't continue to just do that. You need to do something different. So anyway, I come to this point where I realize that I need to do something different. And I've gotten these things in the mail and these things in magazines about improvement tapes and all that, and they're ridiculously expensive. Now, to give you an idea how long ago this was, things came in cassette tape. Okay, I didn't say 8-track, I did say cassette. Among others, yes. Okay? And the price is outrageous. It's like $60 or $70 for something. Right? And that's when $60 or $70 really mattered to me. I mean, not that it doesn't matter now, but it just buys a lot less today. And I thought, oh, what the heck? What do I have to lose? I'm already broke. What is broker than broke? I'll buy one. I was fascinated. And I think my first collection... Has anybody ever heard of Zig Ziglar? And it was like, wow. Now, I'm still not following Christ. But I'm listening to this guy, and his principles make sense. And woven into them is this, you cannot escape it, because every 5 minutes, there's some scriptural principle that I think, I've heard that before. But I've never heard it explained quite that way. I listened to that whole CD set, about 6 or 7 times. I was captivated. It really changed the way I thought. And the reason that I'm telling you this story is that I can remember distinctly about my 3rd or 4th time through that thinking, this has made such a difference in my life that one day I would like to be able to do for other people what this has done for me. One day I would like to be able to unlock for other people some of what this has done for me, because I don't think I've ever had anybody do this for me the way this has been done. Okay, so in the last number of years, that has given me motivation to go back through the scripture, to go back through numerous other books of all different types, and try to unlock stuff and make sense of it, so that when I sit across the table from somebody, I have something to give them that might help them to start to unlock things in their life that are stuck. I have motive now. Because I remember what it felt like to be 25, broke and dumb. And rebellious too. And I didn't want to be that for the rest of my life. So the question that I have for all of you is, do you remember what it felt like to be who you were that you don't want to be anymore? Would you like to help some other people over that hurdle? And if you would like to help some other people over that hurdle, then you need to begin to see yourself not as a sheep anymore, but as a shepherd. And you need to begin training to be a shepherd instead of a sheep. Did that make sense? Yes.
Yeah, I felt like one of the other things to what he was saying about changing that A, and I feel like I have to be a D, because I have to, like you said, right at the beginning, plan and have strategic and discipline. But yeah, that is the thing that I take part
of. Well, my question was, really, we're still working on that for ourselves.
Okay. Start with that again. I'm not sure I understood you.
I think I've explained it. I'm not there myself yet. I'm still stuck in sexual addiction, so I can't teach somebody how to stay out of sexual addiction. I'm still shooting dope, so I can't teach somebody how not to shoot dope. I'm still drinking, so I can't teach somebody how not to drink. I'm still caught up in, oh, I'm a workaholic. I can't teach somebody about margin. Like that kind of stuff.
Do you remember what we discussed at the diner and you argued with me a little bit? I said the other night to him, and we had the two Jims and I, we had one of these, I love going out with the two Jims. We get into great discussions. It was 11:30 before we got out of the diner. It was pretty late. But I said to Jim, and I've said this to all of you, if you don't have a purpose in life, almost anything will distract you. When you have a purpose for living, when you have a reason to get up in the morning, then everything starts to be done on purpose. And what I suggested to Jim was, so long as you don't have a real, hardcore, defined purpose for becoming what you're not, you will remain stuck in what you are. If you want to help, this is the difference between leaders and followers. The difference between a leader and a follower is two people are stuck in the swamp. The follower stays stuck in the swamp and says, boy, it sucks to be here. The leader doesn't enjoy being in the swamp anymore, but he says, but there's got to be some way out. And the follower says, but how? Which way will we go? And the leader says, I don't know, but being stuck here isn't the way, so let's find a way out.
One of them will tread water, believing that someone will show up. The other one's going to swim, saying, I'm going to find an island somewhere. I'm going to do something.
And you know what? The leader is probably going to fail two or three times before he finds a way out of the swamp.
Real tired.
And he's going to be real tired. But he will figure a way out of the swamp because he is motivated, he is driven, he has a purpose, and he will find his way out of the swamp. And once he has done that, he can come back and he can help the other guy get out of the swamp. Purpose makes all the difference in life.
Purpose, discipline, and laziness. How to overcome laziness in a practical way. I find that if I don't want to read something, I know if the purpose is good. It doesn't have that hook. It's not the thing I like. The thing I like, I do like you, I love to read something I like. When I'm forcing myself through something, I have to recognize my habit is anything that distracts me. So I'm sitting at the kitchen table, I got this crap I have to read, and I think, oh, I'll check the weather on the TV. And I'm 2 hours later watching some movie that I have to read. But I have to discipline. Has to overcome will get me further than the desire. Like I've had the desire to get through this thing, but recognizing that I'm distracting myself, and the discipline comes in that I'm going to get up and check the weather. But I'm not going to sit down. I'm going to come back and read this. I'm going to kick the trash out, but I'm not going to. Like I got to. The discipline is watching what's going to distract me. Discipline isn't. For me, it isn't in the glue my ass to the chair kind of thing. So that if I got,
what you're describing is you need to know yourself, and every one of us needs to know ourselves. If you want to, okay, so you're going to start a new workout routine, right? And you find that certain things don't work for you. Over a period of time, you learn when you've hurt your body in a bad way versus when you've hurt your body in a good way. You learn the difference between good hurts and bad hurts, between good exhaustion and bad exhaustion. And over a period of time, you will become a student of your own body. You can become a student of your own habits and cycles, and you can work around them. That's why I never tell people, you should do this at this time, in this way. I might give you a few recommendations, but each of us lives completely different lives. We're in different relationships. We have different child or no child at home situations. We have different work demands. Every one of us has a different life. My goal is not to tell you how to live a rigid life. My goal is to help you to understand that there are certain important, if you've ever heard the illustration of the rocks in the jar and the sand and all that, right? That you put the big rocks in first and there's always room for the sand. Have you all heard that? Or do I need to tell you that again? Good. Enough heads have nodded, so you get it. My purpose is simply to remind you that there's maybe a rock that you've forgotten to put into the jar. That if you really care about the people around you, you're going to have to make an investment in yourself that will equip you to be able to effectively reach them. That's a big rock that needs to go in your jar. How you get it in there is up to you. Did that kind of summarize what? And so for you, you know your weakness. I can even identify with that. Okay, you know when that is for me? That's sitting down on Friday nights after I've worked all week and I'm tired and I would really like to just go home and veg. And I got 2 or 3 hours worth of finished prep to do to make sure that I'm ready for Saturday morning. And I'm sitting at the same computer that would allow me to continue to read emails as they pop up on the screen. Oh, might be a new sale there. Better check that.
When I'm focusing on discipline, which I can appreciate as a man, I want to be something I can work with. It touches the macho kind of mentality.
Yeah, cool.
It shortens the distraction. I shorten the distractions and increase the focus.
I understand exactly what you're talking about because I have mental deficit. I get distracted. Just what you're saying.
Okay.
My question that was going to be to you.
Another one.
How do we create the motivation that does not exist?
That honestly is an issue between you and God. Okay. I really have to say that. Do you care about the people that are around you?
That's the answer. I have the same problem. I have ADD and distractions, but I find the more I focus on God, the more you focus on God, he'll put you on the right path. The less you do, the more passive you have.
If you don't have a purpose, my purpose in everything I do should be to glorify God.
Well, you said should be. My purpose should be to do this. We're not talking about what your purpose should be. What is your purpose now?
It is that, but it doesn't always pan out.
So what you're saying is your purpose in life is to honor God, except when you come first. We all do that. I mean, we do that all the time.
But when you first go into the military, you first go into boot camp. Why? Because you have no idea how to manage your time. You're out of your element. You're a kid. You have no idea what routine and structure look like. You don't get it. So they're going to tell you when to eat, go to the bathroom, shave. They're going to tell you when to do everything in the hopes that if we tell you this enough, you will get into a structured, disciplined schedule. You will. You'll pop up at 6 a.m. and rather than go, oh, time for mess, let's go, we go here. You know what I mean? You memorize things to a point where I heard a guy the other day, he ain't been in the Marines for 40 years, and they asked him a number of his gear, and he went, oh, that's your helmet.
Right.
He knew that. Why? Because it had been so ingrained.
Once a Marine, always a Marine. I really believe that.
But for me, I had to create a routine because my life was so scattered. That this is what I do. I mean, a routine, structure, stability. It's what we as shepherds need. That's what a shepherd is. He's stability for the flock. He's security for the flock. Why? Because he's so routine. We go here, we do this. We go here, we do this. And we never go over here. We just don't do that. Why? Because it wastes my time. I know I'm going to get caught up. I don't sit in front of the TV or the computer. I know what
we do. Okay, and that's what we should do. So, and here's another way to answer your question. Just a second, and I'll get to you. We've talked about accountability before. But you need it. You need somebody that will sit across the table from you that knows what you care about or say that you care about and will simply ask you, are you doing what you say matters? And it's not that they're guilting you into do it. All they're doing is reminding you need somebody, until you have the internal discipline, you need somebody outside yourself to provide some external discipline.
What does it say right there? Coaching. I'm in the Olympics. I'm a great sprinter. I'm not there alone. I have a coach. I'm a great tennis player. I have a coach. Everyone has a coach. No matter what level you get to, you still have a coach.
And you find that when you don't, if you do exactly what you said, you plateau, you never get any better. You've seen people in the Olympics who have transferred from this coach to this coach.
That is an excellent point. I'm glad you brought that up. Because the person who gets it, just like we said, the practices that get you to one place won't take you to the next. It's possible that the people that took you to one level won't take you to the next.
And you look at that thing. They're professionals, so to speak. Should they know what to do and how to do it? And there's truth, yes they do, but you need a coach, accountability, you need other eyes, you need other voices, ears, everything, motivating you, pushing you, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they have a desire, they know the reward, but yet you need help.
Just on that line, and then I want to move on. No, I'm going to stop. I'm going to hold that. You had your hand up.
This whole thing about being a sheep or a shepherd, and his question is an attitude. You know, is it an attitude that it's all about me, or is it an attitude that it's not about me, it's about Jesus Christ, and it's about helping someone else? But a lot of that, what I'm hearing, comes down to whatever a person's brokenness is, that he feels like that needs to be fixed first. But that's not necessarily true, because I feel like even though I'm broken, that means I'm just where God wants me to be. And this is a place that I can grow, you know, but I have to want to grow. I have to want to get out of myself.
And that's a principle that...
Because the Lord has saved many people through me.
Okay. There's a principle that Jim and I talked about, and we battled back and forth about it. We don't necessarily see eye to eye on it. It's the idea of what level of, and I'm going to put this in quotes, what level of fixed do I have to achieve before I am qualified to help fix others? Do you remember the discussion? I mean, it had to do with leadership and all of that.
One day clean can help a guy with no days clean. A guy with a week helps the guy with one day. A guy with a month helps the guy with a week.
So you don't necessarily have to be like...
Then we see Peter in the Bible, and he was still messed up.
And that's the truth, and that's that. I don't want to go ballistically spiritual here, but one of the lies that I think we buy into is that I have to be whole before I can help. You were born a sinner, and you are a sinner in recovery. And this is... You remember what you said? Everybody has an A? I love that phrase. Everybody, that should be a bumper sticker. Everybody has an A. So this is an AA meeting for sinners. Okay? You're here because you're a sinner in recovery. You will be in recovery for the rest of your life.
Then we struggle, well, now am I a hypocrite because I'm not? That's where we're hiding.
But again, everybody has something to offer. Nobody is all good or all bad. There is no perfect person. There was one thing nailed into a tree. Period. End of story. So that means the rest of us are failed. Period. End of story. You're broken. Get over it.
Right.
What are you willing to do to help yourself? You're out. I read a story about a guy who cut off his own wrist, put his own arm off to get out.
Right.
It took a minute. He went through a lot of physical pain, but guess what? Unwilling to give up. Unwilling to just lay there and die. What are you willing to do? Do something.
Okay. Let's not get too sidetracked here. All right, so we're talking about personal investment. So how do you need to invest in yourself as a coach if you're going to be ready to work with other people? So I put down a couple of scriptures here, and then I've put down some things that I want you to look up. Incidentally, I expect you to take this book home and honestly look at some of the scriptures that are referenced here. Read them. Read them through a few times. I'm giving you homework, and I'm serious. I want you to do it. Because you don't have structure in your own life here, I'm going to say it for you. Because you don't have any structure in your own life, and you don't have any plan for reading the scriptures on your own, I'm giving you a plan. Run with the plan.
It's funny that you said that, because that's what I need. For me, that's what I need. I need homework. I need someone to say, to give me a task. Go home, read this, bring that information next week.
Now, I'm going to tell you why I have these. These are some of my favorite scriptures. Some of the ones that I just have referenced here are ones that I routinely will return to. Every 3 months, every 6 months, I'll spend some time in these and look through them because I know I need them. Because by the time a few months has gone by, I know I need to return to them because I'll be in need of them again. Okay, that's just something I've learned about myself. All right, so this first one is like we're looking at what do I need to become? How do I need to become an effective conduit? So let's just read this. This is Paul. He's talking to the Corinthians. He says, working together with him, which is Christ. So he identifies himself, working together with him. This is how Paul sees himself. Could you say that about yourself? I, fill in the blank with your own name, I, blank, am working together with Christ. And we appeal to you not to receive the grace of God in vain. What is he saying? I appeal to you not to receive the grace of God in vain. What's our word for the day?
Invest.
What's God done in each of us?
Invest.
And so what is Paul saying? I'm pleading with you that you not take for granted the investment God has made in you, but that you make some fruit come out of that investment that God has made in you. For he says, in the favorable time, and this is God talking, now I listen to you, and in the day of salvation I have helped you. And so now Paul again talking to the Corinthians, behold, now is the favorable time, behold, now is the day of salvation. Now this is how he describes it. We put no obstacle in anyone's way. Okay, so you're going to be sitting down with somebody and you're going to be helping them through a process of growing spiritually. So take this personally. I put no obstacle in anyone's way, so that no fault may be found with my ministry. But as a servant of God, I commend myself in every way. In other words, I make what I'm saying believable and credible, because when a person looks at the general patterns of the way I live, they don't say, I don't want to turn out like you. Why should I take your advice? I certainly don't want to turn out like you. So what a guy is essentially doing, remember the last week and I said people initially buy the message of the pastor and the church and gradually it's transferred to Christ? When people accept, when people embrace the gospel, they are initially embracing the gospel because of what they have seen in the people that live the gospel. And gradually, over a period of time, we help people's trust to be transferred from the people who are the church to the God who is the head of the church. That is our job, to help transfer the trust. But initially, and this is exactly the way Paul describes it, initially, people are looking to us and seeing whether the gospel is a credible way to live based on what they see in us. So what Paul is saying is, I don't want to be the one who says, whom people say about me, I would never want to become like that, therefore I would not want to listen to the gospel message. Do you get that? People are going to look at you and they're going to say, if you're a product of the gospel, I either like what I see and I would like to learn more about that gospel, or if you're a product of the gospel, I never want to become that. So let's look at some of what he does. So we put no obstacle in anyone's way, so that no fault may be found with our ministry. But as servants of God, we commend ourselves in every way by great endurance, in affliction and hardships and calamities and beatings and imprisonments and riots, in labors, in sleepless nights and hunger. Are you clear on that?
Doesn't sound boring, does it?
What does commend?
Now, if I were to, if you were to not know someone, okay, and you wanted to get, so you want to know John, you want to do something for John, I would write a letter of recommendation. I know you, and I think, John, that you would be, that you would be benefited if you hired, what's your name?
Rob.
Okay. Or whatever. What is Paul's call? This is especially powerful when you understand that Paul is essentially a volunteer. Do you understand that? Because some people think, oh, well, that's the pastor's job or that's the professional's job to invest this time and do this because they get paid to do it. I want you to take this all the way back to the founding of the church. Are these paid professionals doing this? Not at all.
Some people support
him. Well, support is not the same as knowing you got a paycheck coming every week.
I just say, I think he made 10, he did whatever.
Pretty much he's just an everyday guy or whatever. But you also have pastors that work full-time too. You have pastors that have full-time jobs, the churches that they have to sustain them. So they,
right.
They preach on Sunday.
My point is not to talk about pastors. My point is for each of us to embrace the idea that essentially we are all volunteers.
Right.
Every one of us, we have a choice to make. Are we going to serve Christ through the pain, through the difficulty, through the hurt, through the inconvenience, whatever it is. And so the first collection of things that he describes as things that he doesn't want to get in the way of his effectiveness are physical. So what are the physical excuses that we tend to use to prevent us from serving? I'm tired.
I'm tired. It hurts. I'm broke.
I'm busy.
Can't concentrate.
My
he gets on my nerves.
I got beat up at work.
Really? You probably deserved it, though, so that was different.
Yeah, there was a bar fight that you mentioned in my life. I didn't sleep last night.
Jim?
I'm hungry.
You're the only guy I know that's wearing glasses and still needs to hold the paper at arm's length to read it. What is up with that?
Yeah. But it says, here's the funny part, you talked about it. We commend ourselves in every way. Bye. Just like you said, great endurance, affliction, hardships, calamity, beatings, imprisonments, riots, labor, sleepless nights, hunger.
Okay, stop right there.
Here's my resume. Yeah.
By comparison with Paul, how do your excuses... How do your excuses for not getting in the game stack up?
Pretty lame.
It's like watching football players today.
How?
I'm just asking you, and this is why we read the scriptures. You see, when I read this personally, when I as a coach sit down and read this, and I'm thinking to myself at the same time as I'm reading this, I wonder if I have time. I'm a little tired tonight. Wow, that goes right out the window.
His reason is big enough. When the reason is big enough, the facts don't matter. So all these things really didn't matter. He had a cause.
He had a cause, he had a call, he had a purpose, he had a reason for doing this. Do you have a cause? Do you have a call? Do you have a reason for doing this? Now we move on to the next level of things that we don't want to get in the way. Remember, you're a coach, so when you read this, you're reading this as a coach. What are the things in my life that I do not want to get in the way of my effectiveness? By purity, by knowledge, by patience, by kindness. So what are the opposite of those things?
Mean.
Okay. Meanness, selfishness. Come on, this is not hard.
Dumb.
Well, what's the opposite of purity? Okay, what's in your life that's in the way? What's in your life that's going to disqualify you? Start somewhere then. Do you see what I'm saying? And this is where, again, we come back to purpose. Where there are things in my life that I don't want them there, and I don't want them there just because it would offend God, and it would offend God, and it would compromise that relationship, but I also don't want them there because it's going to contaminate my effectiveness.
Well, it says here, like even in James, it talks about changing the tongue. You know, but he says we all stumble in many ways. If anyone's never at fault, and what he says, he is a perfect man.
Okay, I'm really glad you brought that into it, because now what it's saying is, okay, every day I'm going to stumble with many of the things on this list, with a lack of purity, with a lack of understanding, with a lack of patience, with a lack of kindness. Well, I know that one for sure. With a lack of genuine love, with a lack of truthful speech, I'm going to struggle every day with a lot of these things. And so, read that James thing again, please.
Well, it goes on to say, if anyone's never at fault in what he says, he's a perfect man, able to keep his whole body in check.
Okay. Do you remember the series we did a while ago, The Moments of My Life? It was a long time ago. It was 2 years ago, maybe, by now. Do you remember the principle? The main principle? I am such an effective teacher. I am so proud of myself.
No, you don't do that, though. No. Exactly what we do. Disqualify ourselves.
It's really not me. I've just been dealing with bad stock. I've made a bad investment all these years.
I will disqualify myself because I, for whatever reason, don't fit this perfect picture that I have in my head.
Okay, here was the principle of the moments of my life. It is very probable that in the next moment I may fail, and it's what I do in the moment after I fail that makes all the difference. Do I lay there in my guilt, my frustration, my confusion, or do I pick myself up and recognize that the grace of God accords me a fresh start and I move on? I failed in this moment. Am I going to lay in that moment for the rest of my life, or am I going to get up and in the next moment get back on the path that I was walking on? And that is the whole principle of the moments of my life. What?
That's the whole difference, right? That's church.
And one of the great executives at Harley Davidson said, you can screw it up absolutely, unequivocally. You think that that's it, you've lost the customer. You screwed it up so bad. It is the urgency that you place on that repair that will decide if you have a customer. When you say, oh, everybody drop everything, we have a failure. Everybody drop everything, we focus on this. That's going to decide whether or not you retain that customer. You can screw it up. It's whether or not you acknowledge the failure. When someone catches you in a lie,
okay,
acknowledge it. You know what, you're right.
And that is what makes the difference, incidentally, and we're going to get back on track here. You've done a really good job of not leading us astray this morning. I'm proud of you, but... Do you see how helpful it is to read the scripture intentionally instead of, I'm going to come back to this again, a devotional guide is a great place to start. But you need to be intentional. If you're going to train for something, if you were going to train for work, what are you going to read? Suppose I told you, I need you to be able to operate a specific machine, and I need you to be prepared to operate that on first thing on Monday morning. Are you going to read the Wall Street Journal? Is that going to help you?
Well, it depends on what you put after that. He just said there's a whole list of codes that I need to know. Did they say where you're fired because you can't run this machine now? Because if there's no consequence behind that...
I'm assuming that you want to do this, okay? I'm assuming that you're here this morning because you want to be a coach, because you want to make an investment in somebody else's life. And so if you want to make an investment in somebody else's life, the first thing you need to do is begin to invest in your own life. And that's why you need to have intentional scriptural reading, not random scriptural reading. This is a personal inventory. Remember one of the other things we talked about the other night? Jim asked me a great question. He said, well, he actually made it as a statement. He said, well, you probably regularly inventory. And he caught me off guard for just a second because, honestly, I don't regularly sit there and make a list of things. I said to him, and I countered with, no, actually, I go to certain passages in the Bible and I let them inventory me. And that's the way I do it. And I'm not telling you that that's the right way to do it. I simply go to texts like this and I say, today, how did I stack up against this? Where do I need to work? Where did I fail?
But we all need to do that in some way, some fashion.
Yeah, that is taking an inventory. Where do I have lack? What do I have more than enough of? I'm really good right now with my drug addiction, but maybe my sexual addiction is getting in my butt. I haven't wanted to use in 25 years, but maybe I have trouble with pornography. Maybe I have trouble with whatever, spending money, retail therapy, call it. You know what I mean? Whatever it might be, I'm struggling here.
See, the only difference between Jim and every other person in this room is Jim is more open because Jim has been through recovery. Recovery makes people open. They talk about things almost to the extent that other people in the room get red in the face because they're embarrassed. Because people that have been in recovery are that open and honest. The rest of us have issues. Okay, you got issues. I don't care whether you want to tell me your issues. Believe me, y'all got issues. I got issues. And so we think that we are going to disqualify ourselves. No, get into this and understand if you failed in the last moment, this is a new moment. Begin the process again. If I were John and this were Sunday morning, I'd say, everybody say, y'all got issues. I mean, I would. I mean, it's just one of those, you have issues. There you go. Thank you, John.
You got issues. Somebody got issues about your issues. Your issues have issues.
But it's okay. This is true. It's all right. We all got them.
All right. So let's read the 2 Timothy 2:22. So flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness. Okay, so now we're not talking about things that I need to be, but things that I need to go after. Pursue righteousness and faith and love and peace. Just stop right there. What are you going to do after you read that? I'm going to tell you what most of you are going to do. You're going to say, okay, I got that. Close your Bible and walk out the door. If you want to be a trainer of other people, what are you going to do after you read that? So flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace.
No, you missed it.
Yeah.
You stopped reading. That's the problem with most scripture. Keep reading.
Along with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart.
Keep going.
Okay. Have nothing to do with foolish, ignorant controversies.
Whoops. Keep going.
Who's teaching this here?
You know that they bring quarrels. Stop fighting with people.
You missed the point. Can I? Do you want to teach or do you want me to? No, I'd like to if I have a chance sometime.
Go ahead. You shut up.
What are you going to ask yourself? You're going to stop right there and you're going to say, in what I know that I have to do over the next 24 hours, how can I pursue it righteously? No, you're really going to ask that question. What will I do that will make the difference and will allow me to pursue it righteously? How do I have a chance to put my faith into action? Is there something that I'm trying to manage myself? Maybe God's called me to do something bigger and I don't want to. I want to keep it small so I can manage it myself. I want to keep it small so it's under my control, and God's called me to step beyond that and maybe take a risk. You know that verse where it says that the scriptures are like a two-edged sword and they're going to reveal to you who you are? The scriptures are alive because it's in these texts that God can personally, through His Spirit, talk to each of us. God knows the challenge you're going to face today. God knows what you're doing today. And God can use these texts to speak to you individually, personally. If you'll, after you read that, spend a couple of moments and say, how does that apply to me right now today? Who's the person in my life today that is going to be the most difficult to love? What do I need to do differently? You know how you start your day. I talk with guys about this all the time. It's the cup of coffee and it's out the door. I'm telling you, listen to me, your day is guaranteed to fail when you start the day that way because you have no plan for your day. When you go out the door without a plan for how you are going to respond, you are going to react to everything. Do you understand the difference?
Big time.
Have you ever reacted?
There is a difference.
Have you ever reacted? I certainly have reacted, and I am not a pretty reactor.
Being proactive instead of reactive. Being proactive. You're a first reactor instead of a first responder.
Thanks.
Isn't this where we see the example of Jesus? He lived life with a purpose. He wasn't reacting to everyone's demands and everyone's calling and everyone's desires at once. He had his discipline. He got along with the Father and he set for the day. And he wasn't all over the place. And you can look at that and say, well, he was, but no, he kept moving with his purpose. That's a difference there.
Despite what you might think, I love what John said there, despite what you might think, when you read the Gospels, the four Gospels, casually, Jesus had to say no to things. In order to say yes to some things, Jesus had to certainly, clearly say no to other things. When they made a right at a crossroads instead of a left, they were saying yes to one town, but no to another. And that was not a random accident. I cannot somehow picture Jesus getting to the crossroads and say, when you guys got a coin? I don't have any pockets. When you guys got a coin so we can flip it and see which way we're going? So I don't think it was that way.
We see it all the way back. We take it so simple. He's 12. He's in the temple. I must be about my Father's business. And oh yeah, we know that. But you see him taking a course and direction in life, a priority in his life.
Purpose gives direction.
All right. So, every coach, we'll come down to this next thing, every coach will have a collection of personal spiritual fitness routines. Before you can help another person to develop a fitness routine, a spiritual fitness routine, you have to have one of your own. Do you have something that you would really genuinely describe as a spiritual fitness routine?
Give me an example.
Let's define spiritual fitness. What is spiritual fitness?
Practice.
What?
You got practice.
Yeah, you got. I'm asking you to define spiritual fitness.
Something that strengthens your relationship
with God. That is definition 101. That's a part of a definition.
You got to flex your spiritual muscles. You have to stretch the envelope. You can't lift 50 pounds. You're only going to get 50 pounds stronger.
Okay. We're going to come back to the elemental definition here. You've heard me say, I feel like I say this so often that I never want to say it again. What is your spiritual life?
Connection to God.
Oh, really? Okay. Here we go. Pay attention. Your spiritual life is how your inner man, your spirit man, responds to everything else in life. It is how you relate to God. It is how you relate to the rest of humanity. It is how you relate to the earth. It is how you relate to yourself. Sin divides us on all three planes. Sin separates us from God, from others, from ourselves. Your spiritual fitness is your ability to rise above that so that you relate more effectively to God, all of humanity, in various degrees of intimacy, the earth, and to yourself. Okay, so now we have a definition of what a spiritual life is. So what would spiritual fitness or vitality be? Exactly.
It,
right.
At whatever level. Or, well, maybe at a certain specific level. Maybe your fitness level is only here today, but you're seeking fitness level here. Like, I don't desire to be a pastor. I have no desire to take John's job. I don't want that job. Where I'm at is kind of good, but can I do this better?
Okay, so let's make it so easy to understand. Jim, there's nothing wrong with what you said, but I just want to... What is physical fitness? No, exercise is something that you do to improve your physical fitness. What is physical fitness?
Health. It's the body's ability to do a task effectively.
That is a good definition. That's about where I was going with that. Yes. It's the body's ability to perform well in a variety of circumstances. And the way we measure that, which is what ties in nicely with your definition, is you are not physically fit to the extent that you cannot perform the things that you feel are essential to perform. Okay, so if you have a 100-pound weight in front of you and you can't lift it and you need to lift it in that moment, assuming that is a reasonable goal, okay, if I said 1,000, that's beyond your ability. But if there was a 100-pound weight, you needed to move it, and you can't, in that moment, you are not physically fit. So what are the spiritual stressors in your life? This is how you tell whether you're physically fit. What are the spiritual stressors in your life, and what do they reveal about your spiritual fitness? Does this make sense?
Well, yeah, because what is your relationship like with God? What is your relationship like with yourself? What is your relationship like with the...
Well, you don't know that until there's a stressor put on there. So when God asks you to do something and you say, I can, I won't, or I'm not sure, then in that moment you are not as spiritually fit as you might desire to be. Or maybe you just don't give a rip. We know people who don't care about being physically fit. Their solution to the 100-pound weight is to call somebody else.
Could you bring this into, this is getting theoretical now. What's a spiritual stress?
A confrontation with your wife and how you respond to the confrontation. A demand placed on you at work. Whether you say yes or no, in other words, whether you get sucked into saying yes to something that you shouldn't have, versus having the discernment to say, that is not my responsibility. A call from somebody in church that says, can you be here and do this? And you say, is this my responsibility or isn't it? And how do I do this graciously? There were times in Jesus' life when he was, just the same as we said there are times when he said no, there were times when it would seem the demands on him that he voluntarily placed on himself were pretty intense. And yet it doesn't seem that there was a breakdown in his graciousness. So these are all spiritual stressors. Does that make sense now?
And his spirit didn't get depressed as a result of something. He held his joy. He held his ability to communicate effectively. He held those things. He didn't all of a sudden like, now I can't. He still had it held. He was still able to function on the other three levels if this one got attacked.
So before you can begin to help someone else with a spiritual fitness routine, you first off have to have one, and you have to be managing it. So, anybody here a regular gym rat? You know, shows up at the gym pretty frequently, right? If you do the same things all the time, the same way, pretty soon you plateau. So the only way to be effective in your fitness is to vary your workout, right? If you don't, you become almost lopsided.
Well, we talked about this. We have talked about this. Because Bill, he says that. Don't just read that book. There are plenty of great books out there. You've turned me on to easily a dozen great books to read that, okay, I've read the scriptures and they're really kind of, you know what I mean? They're speaking to me, and I'm not sure how. Do I need somebody else's perspective on this? And so I took Glenn's advice and started reading some of the materials that he was reading. And it affected me to the level of extreme, where I didn't put it down until I was finished. I went on vacation, I picked it up. I didn't put it down until I was finished. The page is a dog-eared mark. I wrote stuff down that I wanted to remember. But it's scripture. It's just in a different box. It's not in that box. Stretch yourself maybe that way.
Okay, so that was a small example of
something.
Of coaching, okay, in a very limited way. So I meet with Jim and I say, have you tried this? So because I have a routine in my own life, or because I have found this particular workout to be effective at helping me with something, I say, maybe you try this workout. But before you can do that with other men, you have to be doing that yourself. Experiment with some, I'll be right to you, it looks like you want to say something. Experiment with some different routines. Find what fits who you are. But do something. Start somewhere. And then don't get lazy and continue. And we'll go back to the gym analogy. Don't get lazy and go back to the same five machines every time and that's it.
Look at The Biggest Loser on TV. That's what they tell you. Keep going. Even when you fall down, get up. If you miss a day, okay?
And even that is part of the... Okay, now I got two people to come to. Even that is part of the thing. Knowing, okay, I missed yesterday. But I know that, and I'll get back on track. You're second in the queue.
I just wanted to say that a coach is not the best player. Vince Lombardi was not the best football player ever. Jim Thorpe was not the greatest coach ever. And I think as coaches, we have to see that sometimes we're calling plays, we're not making plays,
mm-hmm.
and that's part of the role. We don't have to be bench pressing a lot, but we have to know how to help people.
No, you're absolutely right. That's a very valid point, Scott.
Well, I'm thinking about this being spiritually fit. The only way to be spiritually fit is to gain knowledge from reading the Bible, the Word of God. And I'm thinking about how this pertains to coaching. And there's this feel, felt, found thing. I know how you feel. It felt the same way. But in order to get to that third step, you have to be spiritually fit as a resource to direct somebody, guide them into the Word of God with intelligence. Because you can't tell somebody what to find until you've found it yourself.
That's the two guys in the swamp, and the one guy has made it out, so he knows how to come back and help the other guy out of the swamp. And unfortunately, I think sometimes we have a lot of people that are still in the swamp themselves telling other people how that they've heard that there's a map out of the swamp and that person should go that way. Dave.
You don't go to a job with the wrong tools.
Yeah.
You have to have the right tools. And you have to do it. Doing it the best you possibly can. Any other way?
Okay, we have plenty more weeks. I'm not cutting anybody. Wait, let me say this, and then we have plenty more weeks. I feel like I cut Dave off in the middle of something. I didn't want to, but there's stuff that I kind of will be coming back to that. I don't want to just talk willy-nilly about everything all in one week. Our key word, invest. I'm inviting you again to begin to invest in yourselves and in your relationship with God so that you are equipped to invest in the life of another human being. Your investment in yourself has to precede your investment in another human being. Don't get it backwards. Don't try to invest in other people until you've invested in yourself. But that should give you motive, starting today, if you're not, to start to invest in yourself. I wish I had had more time yet to talk about
this whole thing. God wants to do something in us, for us, and through us. And we talk about it, love God, serve all. That's the premise of Scripture. And so it's what we're really talking about now. How does this happen in our lives? How's this going to take place?
I haven't forgotten you.
Part of how we know this is, like you said, take an inventory.